Welcome to another edition of the Bear Down Chicago podcast with your hosts, Ryan Dangle.
You picked a tie? What are we, true, in Europe?
Ties happen in the NFL, man.
They're called draws, right?
Yeah, why? Why are we doing? No, absolutely not. All right, well, you got to keep your own record now because I don't have a tie column. I got a win-loss column.
Patrick Sheldon.
I say that because the flashlight emanating and beaming from the steaming pile of was today's game is David Montgomery. He is the flashlight in my pile of poop.
Brendan Chagrou.
So our buddy Brendan, who writes for USA Today, I have always screwed up his last name. Brendan. Brendan.
And Jack Wright.
Sorry, Captain Flo's over there.
I'm not Captain Flo.
So you're not excited, Jack. You're not excited about having Sarah Spain.
Yeah,
on our
wow.
Show.
Maybe no, I'm the talent. Is that what we found out?
Featuring Cam Ellis.
Once I was like trying to get a happy answer out of him, and I was like, "Hey, man, like, do you take out of these situations? Like, what is it like to know that like you're this beloved that like these videos are going viral?" And he was just like, "I don't do it for that attention." And then they just took the next question, and I was just like, "Okay, like, I'm gonna melt into my seat and never come back here ever again."
And Logan Bradley.
Bears rich history defensively, lot of good linebackers. First round draft pick, hell of a player, a Bear that is going to go down in history. Nobody's going to forget. I am bringing back Shay McClellan.
The Bear Down Chicago podcast. Yeah, we're that Bears podcast.
All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome in to another edition of the Bear Down Chicago podcast. I'm your host for this evening, Brendan Chagrou. You can follow me on Twitter or X at Brendan Chagrou. That's S-U-G-R-U-E. Also, make sure you check out my work at bearswire.com. This is tough, man. This is a really tough loss. I think this is kind of one direction that the Bears could have gone after last week's debacle against the Washington Commanders. And I think everybody was afraid that, you know, either this team would pick themselves up or they would let themselves fall to the ground. And it's kind of clear what happened after they lose to the Cardinals 29-9. I can't talk about it just with myself. I have to talk about it with this guy right here. He is Jack Wright. You can follow him on Twitter or X at Bear Down Jack. Hello, Jack.
Hey, Brendan, how are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get the initial thoughts. Let's get the initial reaction. And I know you weren't on last week when the whole thing happened with Commanders and the Hail Mary. And I think everybody, including myself and Dangle, we were still kind of just in shock and anger with what happened. So from that moment throughout the whole week, we had issues with players calling out coaches for accountability. Matt Eberflus maybe not necessarily answering direct questions about what he could have done better or doubling down on some things. So I want to ask you, from that moment last Sunday to what you saw today, just how are you feeling? How has everything sort of progressed in your head? And just where are you at right now?
You know, that's a great question. I think the biggest stance that I had throughout the week, amidst all the frustration and fire Flus cries, was, and I know there's like this running joke of me, you know, being Captain Flus. I laugh every time where Sarah Spain is like Captain Flus over there and says, "No eye for talent." Is that what's happening here? She just so masterfully shreds me. It's so funny. If you're gonna get shredded by somebody, I guess not terrible to get shredded by Sarah Spain. Here's my beef. I just really don't like, and I still don't like it, the "there's one cause and one solution" crowd. And I think you've heard me say this, and I think you know my stance on this. It's not so much that I think that Flus should have been hired or that he should be retained. It's not really about that. I just, again, having coached and played for so long, I feel like that single-minded, there's one cause of the Bears' woes. It's Matt Eberflus. There's one cure to the Bears' woes. It's firing the coach. You know, I do think that it just it makes it so that all of the other multifaceted elements of a football game and a football organization go by the wayside in a way that I think, again, is just terribly short-sighted. I understand people's like rage and frustration, you know, and I do think if there was a chance right now where you could pivot to a different coach and change the trajectory of the season, I'd be fully in favor of it. But I guess my biggest thing, and it's kind of my thing, I suppose, maybe I have a bias for, you know, defending coaches because I was one, and I just know how much work goes into it. And I just kind of think to myself, well, okay, well, then is it fire Stevenson too? And is it fire Poles because the offensive line isn't any good? You know, I just looked at last week's game and I was like, well, you lose your right tackle. And so you got a new tackle who's heavily outmatched. You got a corner who's doing who knows what on the Hail Mary. I mean, I think you know what I'm saying. And so I guess that was just the biggest problem I had with the take and like kind of the continual takes. I've said it before. I don't think that we have seen any progress from fire coach, new coach. Like, and that's more of the discussion that we've had about this organization as a whole and the flaws that it has. So yeah, I think probably it's shifted to now, but I've talked for a while, so I want to hear what you think.
You've been consistent with that. And yeah, this isn't anything new in the whole Captain Flus thing. It is, yeah, we make fun of it, but you are maybe a little bit protective of coaches because of your background. I totally get that. There were some things last week that you could point to that were strictly player execution issues. I think you can still point to things that were coaches, but now with this week and now the week that that the Bears have had, and Eberflus gets up there and says, we had a really good week of practice. We talked about it with the leadership council. I got feedback. They got feedback, all of that. We're trying to work this through this together. I mean, I said it at the time, like, you know, a week ago at this moment, essentially, that this team was going to hit a crossroads this weekend. Mm-hmm. And either they get a win and say, this is who we actually are. We are not this team. We are not defined by this bad moment. And we are not going to let things get worse. Or you start to crumble. And now you see what this team actually is, and that leadership cannot control it. Because, man, I gotta say, I saw a lot of quit. I saw a lot of frustration. We've seen that before with certain times, you know, at certain times of the year, but this time I felt it from top to bottom. And I know there is nuance with it. I totally get that. I think early on, I thought for everybody, and look, I don't want to be this Shane Waldron apologist. My guy, Eddie, already thinks I am. he's awesome. But I thought for once, Shane Waldron actually called a decent script. I thought the plays were okay. They just were poorly executed. You saw overthrows, you saw drops, you saw just penalties, you know, people, NFL offensive linemen just creating false starts and pushing the Bears out of field goal range on the first drive. So things like that, yes, I think it's player issues. But then when things start to crumble and you're out of position and you just kind of quit, I think that is on the coaching staff now. And you just kind of see the snowball, things keep snowballing now. Mm-hmm. You can point to this lack of leadership at the top. It is finally affecting these players, in my opinion. And just things went from bad to worse. And my God, having not one, but two just late breakdowns at the end of a half. You go for the Hail Mary last week, and then to do that at the end of the first half, that was game. I mean, that was absolutely brutal. And there was you could tell that this team was done at halftime, and they shouldn't even have gone out for the second half because you kind of knew what was happening.
I want to circle back to the game script and the game plan offensively, because I think if I heard you right, I disagree with you, but I will just say, like, part of what I felt in this week too was I didn't like that Flus didn't just take full responsibility, that he kind of vacillated and hemmed and hawed around like who was responsible for last week's loss. And it sounds like in the press conference tonight, there wasn't a whole lot of accountability. I didn't like the lack of use of timeouts at the end of the game. I didn't like tonight, for instance. I do think Caleb should have been pulled out. I think when you hear players talking about lethargy or, you know, practice not being on full tilt, that's a definite concern. If he's not holding players to a championship standard in the locker room and on the field, you know, that's a concern. If you have the right chemistry and people in the building, I do like the idea of the players leading. I think Caleb's quote was a good one. I think if you get the right formula for that, you might have the formula for a really great team. I would imagine Andy Reid puts a lot of power in the hands of his players when it comes to certain decisions. It's one of the oldest tricks in coaching and in teaching. Sometimes you go ahead and you give your players choices about things that you maybe don't care so much about, and it really makes them feel like they're empowered. And then, like, once they show they can handle that, you give them more power. So, like, I like the ideal of that. It just clearly doesn't look like that's what's happening anymore when it comes to the Chicago Bears, because there's clearly they're just outmatched. I mean, yeah, two very difficult games on the road, 2 weeks in a row, but you didn't meet the moment. You didn't have a good game plan. Your penalties, your performance, you know, all of it. It just clearly shows, sadly, that this staff just isn't doing it. They're just not doing it. And no, we're not hiring Gruden. We're not hiring Gruden, Joe.
Hold on. All right. So I was going to wait to do this, but we want to give some love to the chat. We love everybody being part of this. We do. Some guy named Dave just very clearly fire Flus. That doesn't need to be said. Yeah. Matt, who's on the short list for head coach. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit. I'm kind of in the camp of, I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk about next coaching candidates until like the end of the season. I like to see things. And Jack, that's what you and I were talking about a little bit this week, where we just kind of want to see the season, progress and then see, you know, let the chips fall where they may. I just don't feel like the Bears are going to make a change at this point in the season. But I think it's something we could talk about as we look towards the future. Joe Fusco hired Gruden. Mm-hmm. Not sure about that. Not sure about that. Josh J comes in. Ben Johnson and Cliff Kingsbury are top of mind. It's interesting with Cliff Kingsbury. He called another good game this week against when they were facing the Giants. And then Matt, also just leaving your number one pick in with a depleted O-line in a game that is over to work on timing is a choice. Yeah, it's a bad choice. And if you didn't realize it or if you didn't hear the press conferences from everybody, Caleb did tweak his ankle. He says he's fine. The coach says he's fine, but that is just absolute coaching malpractice to leave him out there. We're going to get into all of that, though. But first, we have some people to thank. So, Jack, I'm going to send it over to you.
Yeah, and I must sound like I get my haircut every single day of the week, but I did get my haircut the other day. And I walked in. So I was a cowboy. I was from do you know the show Westworld, Brendan? Is it Jimmy Flood, I think, or Timmy Flood? And my partner was Dolores Abernathy. So, you know, it was kind of funny to be walking in downtown Naperville in like full cowboy regalia. I think we've got a photo of that. We can pull it up here in a second. It's pretty great. I walked in and said, "Hey, Will, how about, whiskey for my men and beer for my horses?" And this is Will. The next thing you know, I'm doing a shot. So it's the place. Like he is, I'm telling you, this guy is the most personable, wonderful man you'll meet, and is great, great at cutting hair. So Sheridan's Barbershop has been a cornerstone of the Wheaton community since 1954. It's where old school charm meets modern style. It's located in the heart of historic downtown Wheaton. I've got six master barbers ready to keep you looking sharp. Sheridan's is open Monday through Saturday, so it's easy to fit a fresh cut into your schedule with appointments available online or by phone. You can go to sheridansbarbershop.com or you can call 630-668-0137 and book your appointment today. And as I said, I was in Naperville. They've opened a recently new shop there over in downtown Naperville. Hensel's Barbershop has been a local favorite since 1966. They offer the same unbeatable service with a crew of six skilled barbers. They're open Tuesday through Saturday. They've got you covered with walk-ins and appointments alike. Whether you need a quick cleanup or a full transformation, like a Flus transformation, scratch that. Don't get that one. But you can get your transformation. You'll look great. Hensel's has got you covered. So Sheridan's and Hensel's Barbershops, where traditional meets modern.
All right, since you mentioned it, let's see it.
What do you think? How'd I do?
That's pretty good. That's really good.
It's not bad.
I like the hat.
But I like the it hat. was It was like guy walks into a barbershop dressed as a cowboy. You know, it was like the start of a joke. It's, you know, it's funny, right? Like wearing the costume to the holiday, like the Halloween party, no big deal. Walking around in rando society, it's like, is that how the guy dresses or all the time? Or is that Halloween costume?
I mean, dude, I shouldn't put this out in the world, but I don't dress up for Halloween that much anymore. It's just, you know, I just don't do that much. But especially in college, we went out with a bang our senior year. Me and my roommates, we all decided to dress up as the Powerpuff Girls. And so,
love it.
Just cause like, you know, we wore like the tights or whatever. Never done that before in my life. Never done it since. That was an experience. Those things just insane to get off. But yeah, we had the wig and everything, and it was weird walking around.
Right.
There was once that we were at the, and it's college, you know, it's whatever, sure. But we were in the college bars and, you know, I'm at the urinal and somebody walks in and they were like really confused for a hot second. And they were like, just looking around like, is this the, right? Yeah. Okay. Got it.
That's funny. Cause there's nothing more terrifying than, you know, in the world before there were, you know, neutral gender bathrooms, walking in and having that like kick in the gut, like, oh crap, am I in the girl? Am I in the ladies' room?
That's exactly. The guy thought. Man.
There's photos?
All right.
There's photos or no?
There's photos on Facebook somewhere. Yeah. You can dig them out. For the people who are my friends still, you have to go back a decade, but they're there. I also did Ed and Eddie the next year, so I did went back to dressing up like a boy, but we decided to do a Cartoon Network thing for a few years. Yeah,
that's cool.
All right, so bringing it back, we were talking about coaching staff, we were talking about just the inability to prepare. I'm just gonna hit it with a true false for you, Jack. True false, Matt Eberflus has officially lost this team.
Okay, I'm going to say false, but I think it is seemingly on the way. I would give it another week, and I'd like to see the fallout from this week. I guess what I would say is that last week we perhaps saw signs of it, and I could see you making a case that the way they played this week, I think your point was a great one. Brendan, you know, this was a, you know, how are they going to show up after that devastating loss? And I think, you know, when you see a coach who's trying so hard to be validated, you know, take that much criticism from both his team and the press, then I think there was one of two ways that you could have gone when it came to responding. And I think instead of making it almost like this, you know, like kind of sassy swagger, like, oh yeah, watch me now kind of thing from Flus. Yeah. I think instead you got like more like kind of tightened backsides and nervousness. I think Shane showed that. I think Matt showed that. So I think it's probably on its way. I guess I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is true. I'm going to say false for now. I'd like to see a little bit more evidence only because dude did keep the faith of this team through some pretty awful times. So I suppose on some levels, I give him a little bit of equity in that regard. I could be clueless. I'd be interested to see what people say in the chat. Maybe I am. And I'd be interested to see what you say too, Brennan.
I was kind of in your position last week because of everything you said, because of the fact that he has shown in the past that he has been able to keep things afloat and they have been able to come back. I'm thinking of October last year, kind of before Justin Fields got hurt. But I mean, you now have multiple times this season that multiple players have come out and said, I would have done something different. And DJ Moore talking last week about the Doug Kramer play. You know, he's like, I wouldn't have run that then. Cole Kmet's talking about stuff, Kevin Byer, Jalen Johnson, and like so many people. And these are all captains too. So I feel fantastic that they feel empowered to do that. I mean, I'll give Flus credit for, I guess, empowering or inspiring his players that, you know, they can actually talk about it, but he did also kind of warn them. I think everybody got their hand slapped that, hey, you shouldn't say too much to the media, but even DJ Moore, during his Wednesday press conference said, yeah, I shouldn't have said that, but it's how I feel. Like he's basically saying, I still feel like these were the wrong decisions. Mm-hmm. And we saw that a little bit last year, but now that you're seeing it multiple times and that just watching the guys on the field, like I will start to, now that we're in week, week 9, I am going to start looking at the body language, because now like there's enough evidence and there's just enough. I've seen enough and I've kind of seen where this team is going. I think it's too early to do that in week 1 or week 2, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the fact of, you know, losing a game like you did the last week and you come out just so flat, and just everybody looks like they're exasperated on their face. Like they don't want to be there. They don't know what's going on. And they just look tired of it all already. Like that to me tells me that you have lost this team. You are not inspiring this team. I mean, Matt Eberflus coming out at halftime saying, hey, the score is what it is. And we've got each other. And I just want to say, and that's a lot for love or something, and start just, you know, jamming out on Bon Jovi. Is that what you're trying to do? What? Are you just trying to, are you just putting Bon Jovi in the locker room?
Bon Jovi us? Really good messenger? Don't Bon Jovi
us. I think he did. No. I just like this was, I'm telling you guys, this was the week to show who exactly you were after that adversity. And I likened last week, I likened it to the double doink in the sense of a game was won and then it was lost. And the sheer pain and shock that we all felt. We don't need to relive it. It already happened. But you kind of saw that as the breaking point for that 2018 team. Now, the difference of this team was, well, a few differences. One, it was, I'd say, part coaching issue, part player execution, part just, you know, you could have prevented this a lot more than hitting the crossbar twice, but you also had a week to fix it. Like they could have gone out right then and there and said, no, this is not who we are. And we are going to put our foot on the throats of the Cardinals, who had a terrible defense going into this game. They were bottom of the league in passing yards, bottom of the league in rushing yards. They could not get sacks on the quarterback. They couldn't do anything. And you know what they did? They brought in, I think, 16 pressures and got 6 sacks on Caleb Williams, the second most of the season so far, and they just blitzed the hell out of them. No, this was the much better coached team. They knew exactly how to attack the Bears, and the Bears had no fight or no response. As soon as they went down, everything went to hell. So that's a long way of me saying, yes, I think now officially he has lost this team. And I mean, I don't think he can get it back, especially with the gauntlet coming up of divisional games. Like this was the chance and they blew it.
Yeah. I think the second half of the schedule is extreme. I mean, we all know, right? It's incredibly difficult. So do you want to check out some chat again here?
I do. I do. Yes. Sure. We got to shout out Matt Vanderzanen. Thanks for being here. Oh, he lost the team for sure. Right. Jack J, I agree with Jack. It's on the way to losing the locker room from Josh. I totally get that.
Josh is a smart man. Just kidding.
Yeah. Your boy Connor, do we see Caleb out next week? Some BS injury and BS time. I don't think he's going to be out. I think that he said he's fine. Flu said he's fine. I think it's probably going to be one of those things where it's going to be heavily taped up. Maybe he misses a practice or so. Maybe he's limited, but I don't think he's going to miss a week.
So if he's healthy, he plays. Because Connor brought up a decent point. Like, what if you sit for New England, who's kind of trash, to be able to be fully healthy for the gauntlet that's coming up next? I mean, I guess I don't know what Fleece's stance on that would be. If he's healthy, he plays.
Oh man, if he's healthy, he plays. I mean, come on, what are we doing? Like, I mean, it's one thing. Again, you're 4-4 right now. Like, this isn't that's as much true. As I say. Yes. I just got done talking for like 3 straight minutes about how Eberflus has lost the team, and I truly think that is. But at the same time, they are still 4-4. The season is still too early to just say, like, all right, we're tanking, we're doing all this stuff. You have a rookie quarterback. If you have a winnable game, you're playing him unless he is hurt. Now, if you suddenly go down to the Patriots 30-0 at halftime, you pull him. Like, that's the one thing. It's just all about situational awareness. There was no reason that Caleb should have been in that game in the fourth quarter, or at least, you know, 10 minutes into the fourth quarter, because we all saw how it was going. But you can't just sit him just to sit him if he is deemed good enough to go for his ankle. And also, you know, this isn't his shoulder. This isn't his, like, you know, elbow or anything like that. It is an ankle. You can play on it if it's taped. You know, we've all had those ankle injuries. I want to go back here just real quickly because I missed this. You know, Ryan said you're looking great in your Halloween costume.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
And then our guy, Jorge, greetings, my friends. I would not move Eberflus as he is very capable of giving us another top 10 draft pick for 2025. So Jorge thinks the bottom, you know, this is definitely going to bottom out pretty bad.
Can I ask you, Brendan, what, let's say that the Bears weren't owned by the McCaskies and that it was possible that they'd fire a head coach midseason. Is it the type of thing that could change the trajectory of this team, or whether or not the McCaskies would do it or not is a moot point because there's nobody to go to anyway. And you really do, I guess I'm just saying, if you entertain the possibility of them being a big boy franchise and actually firing a coach who deserves to be fired for never winning a game on the road, which probably would be a fireable offense in almost every other team in the league. What do you think? Would you do it? If you own the team or if you're the GM?
I would only do it if things got toxic. And I mean that, like, I think toxic is the correct word. Like, things aren't good right now. And I know there's a difference between a coach is losing the team and the locker room isn't responding versus this is a toxic environment and things are bad. Like, you know, I would say things like what happened with the Panthers last year with Frank Reich and the, you know, meddling with ownership and a lot of playing the blame game. If that happens, I would absolutely do it because there's no benefit of just continuing that toxicity, especially with a locker room that is being led by a rookie quarterback who is still, you know, I think Caleb's doing a good job, as good of a job as he can being a leader. But you don't want that to permeate throughout. Now,
right.
Otherwise, I mean, if things are just kind of bad, I there's really no other good option. I mean, Shane Waldron is not a head coach caliber person. He's just not. I knew that when he got hired by the Bears. Yeah. I was told he was a lead from the back kind of coach. And to be fair, that can work when you're with Pete Carroll and when you're with Sean McVay, you know, because the demonstrative, they're strong leaders. And I just, Matt, that's not Matt Eberflus's style, and you need somebody like that for that type. Is Eric Washington a head coach? I don't know. I really don't know. So, I just, at this point, I don't know if there is a benefit, but if things continue to spiral and things get toxic, I would do it. How about you?
I think I agree. The concern that I have is, ultimately, we are in another situation, a repeat situation. I was trying to look, because I think Matt mentioned again something that I was, I think he mentioned something about, like, the main thing here is that we continue to develop the quarterback. And I think what really concerns me here is that what we're seeing I don't think there's any way to refute that. There it is. Thank you. I don't think there's any way to refute the fact that we're in another situation where we have a top drafted quarterback, a number one in this case, drafted quarterback, who's in bad broth. He's in a really terrible situation once again. Whether you want to put that on the offensive line, or you want to put that on the inconsistencies of Shane Waldron, or you want to put that on the inconsistencies of the head coach. I mean, the one thing that we are clearly consistent at, if there was like a championship organization for not understanding how to properly develop and grow quarterbacks, then we would win that Super Bowl every single year. You see no progression like a Jaden Daniels. And I don't want to go into like ridiculous, insane, inane discussions about the comparison. That's not my point between these two. But what you see is like a progression and you see a development. And what we see in a situation like today is a quarterback running around for his life again, potentially getting hurt again, like throwing errant throws. Not hitting checkdowns when they're available. And I'm not ripping Caleb here either. My biggest concern right now is that we are in like this hellscape of a perpetual Groundhog Day that is quarterbacks going to die in Chicago. You know, so I guess my answer would be if firing Flus and somehow reorganizing this thing now, like right now, there was like a type of an out that pulls saw to try to like salvage that part of it. That part of it to me is probably the most important thing, because you've got a lot of great guys under contract. You got a good defense assembled. There's plenty of good things to like about this team, but that trajectory scares me the most. Like, that road we can't go down again, in my opinion, because like, it's the most important. We see it time and time again, week in and week out. It is the most important position, and you have to get it right. And it's clear we are not getting it right again. And that, I mean, first, it hurts your heart, you know, and it's a kick in the nubbins. But, you know, like second, I just that's my thing. I just I would like to, if there was a firing of a head coach, let's make it purposeful. Like, what's the pivot then?
Yeah.
Tell me what the pivot is and how it's going to be better specifically for Caleb Williams and the offensive trajectory from this point on.
It just sucks because we, and I say we collectively, because I truly believe the vast majority of the fan base saw this exact situation coming in the winter, where we all said, like, there is a chance here. The Bears have not, like, they were okay last year against Matt Eberflus. And yes, we want to talk about the defense. I know Ryan praises him a lot for being a good defensive coordinator. For the most part, that's true. Not necessarily this part or this game against the Cardinals, but we all saw the writing on the wall. You were sticking a quarterback like Caleb Williams with a head coach like Matt Eberflus, who you just didn't see enough growth from. It was the same damn thing with Justin Fields. It was the same damn thing with Mitchell Trubisky. It was the same damn thing with Dick Geron, like, Rex Grossman with Dick Geron. Yeah. Like, just, it always happens where we can never get these things right in terms of timelines. And yes, I think Caleb is the type of quarterback who will be okay when it comes to learning a new system, assuming that things do get cleaned out at the end of the year. But why even have to do it when you could have hired one of these head coaches? And I know the whole thing about Ben Johnson came up this week, where Albert Breer said he was hearing from people that had this job become open with the Bears, this was Ben Johnson's preferred destination. Now, he does reportedly have a high price tag, so who knows how that would have worked out with the McCaskies. But you're right. It feels, it's the same damn thing with Groundhog Day. And the absolute worst part is we all saw this coming. I sort of even could have forgiven a little bit with the Matt Nagy, Justin Fields thing, because A, he was an offensive head coach. B, they didn't necessarily think it was going to happen. And I think it was one thing if they were allowed to pick a quarterback, they should have been extended or fired. It was the same damn thing with this. But, you know, to have a defensive head coach who shouldn't be developing quarterbacks, to do this, I just think it was always a bad idea. And real quickly, before I let you go, I wanted to find a comment here.
The comments are great. Seriously, this is one of our best nights of comments. Thank you all. Not patronizing y'all. Appreciate it very much. Like,
no, super, this is awesome. We want to get to everybody. We really appreciate it. It's a good conversation. I want to highlight Miles Johnson here. Arizona fan here. Caleb Williams will be fine, but you need to build your offensive line. That includes depth. You got the weapons, but if the line isn't intact, that won't matter. Miles, you're definitely not wrong. The line was also banged to shreds this past week. You had Larry Borum, who had not played, he hadn't played since August, who was back out there at left tackle because of injuries to your top two guys. Jenkins was laboring with his ankle injury, I believe. Matt Pryor was already a backup. Darnell Wright gets hurt. And so Jake Curran, who was on the practice squad, it was just a patchwork line because of so many injuries, but it was already kind of a patchwork line in general. So I totally get it.
But, you know, it's interesting because I think Matt a little later said, you know, that, well, I think Miles makes a great point that it maybe runs deeper than that. And I think it runs deeper in that, you know, kind of going back to what you said, I guess I didn't know what Shane Waldron would look like when it came to the development of Caleb and the offense, but I like to be hopeful. That was probably naive. At this point, I think that's probably naive on my part. I think the Bears have shown that they will let so many people who seem to be, like, again, edgy or have a swagger, who may not like fit like whatever the mold of like nice guy character. And I'm not completely discounting that, because I do think it's important, but like, man, we've just let so many people walk out of the building who have the it factor to change a team, either from a head coaching position or from an offensive coordinator's position. We just kept letting those people walk out of the door instead of hiring them. I don't know if we think we're smarter than everybody. I don't know why we keep investing in these folks that just continually they quite simply don't pan out time and time again. And so I do think the offensive line is crucial. And I think that I agree that Poles did, inadequately address the offensive line. But it's clear to me at this point, I mean, I don't know if you saw my tweet or not, but I think sometimes the game's pretty simple, Brendan. Like, one team looked at the Bears, Team A, looked at their opponent, and they said, okay, this is one of the best secondaries in the league. So what they practiced all week long and implemented was a solid run game. They're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to run the ball. We're going to run it down their throats, and then we're going to have a sequence of plays that includes play-action passing, and I'm going to go back to that in just a minute, right? And then Team B, so to your point earlier, saw one of the worst secondaries in the league and one of the worst defenses in the league. And then, you know, I think I took, like, I put up Travolta in Pulp Fiction, like, looking around confused. Like, one team had a plan and they executed the plan, right? Based on the other, based on their opponent's weaknesses. What was Shane Waldron's plan tonight? Like, to me, the biggest problem that it's so clearly evidence, here is, you know, evidence number one. You notice how all season long, no team has ever bit on play action when the Bears run it, whether it's naked play action, right? Like, where naked is where we're not even like trying to hook the end, right? So you leave the defensive end free in hopes that the defensive end gets washed down. So then you can play action boot and your quarterback is clear. We've never seen a defensive end bite on that. We've never seen linebackers bite on that. We've never seen any defensive backs bite on any type of play action or boot action. And that's because he's pulling plays out of a hat, Brendan. There's no clear sequence of any kind. I do think you're right. There are some execution problems. There's some clear errors with like throwing errors and some separation errors with wide receivers. And there's obviously not a very good offensive line. And so maybe that's why Shane's scrambling. But like, I'm telling you, like, if you can't mount a good drive coming out of halftime, like that's a bad plan. Like, if you can't look at the pictures and the video and like find something, you should be able to find a thing. And then you, whatever that weakness is that you witnessed in the film and in the photos, and then you go after that thing. But I think the fact that nobody buys play action from us, one, and the fact that we are terrible in the red zone. I mean, lost in the red zone. Like, those two things, I don't think Shane has a plan. And obviously, I do think that's combined with the fact that there's inadequacies. You have a rookie quarterback and you have a really bad offensive line. But I'm out on Shane. I just am.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a good game plan. There is no clear game plan. We saw an opposing team in Arizona have a fantastic game plan and execute it. And we saw very obviously a Bears team not do that tonight.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you. And maybe I should clarify. I was strictly talking about the first like two series. I thought the script was much better than this game in terms of that. And it was poorly executed. But then once they fell behind and things started to sort of unravel,
like, what are we doing?
Then exactly. Then he just didn't have you're right. He was pulling things out of a hat. It felt like there was just no rhyme or reason. Things were all over the place. Again, you can point to some lack of execution, but it just really feels like, you know, you mentioned that the play actions aren't working. I think the runs are still getting a bit better. I don't know why you move away from DeAndre Swift, who is your best player. Like, he's your X factor, and that is the guy. He's the spark plug who gets things going.
Did we throw the ball to him? Sorry to interrupt.
I think eventually. Eventually. Okay. We didn't last week.
Not once last week.
Yeah, let's.
No attempts to Cole Kmet? Like, none? Are you? I mean.
Yeah. So we need to talk about. We need to talk about that.
Sorry.
Cole Kmet. No. I was going to bring it up at some point. I'm glad you brought it up. Just like the target share. And I don't know if this is a Waldron issue. Weird. I don't know if this is a Caleb issue. Maybe it's a little bit of both. But this is not hyperbole to say you have one of the most reliable tight ends in the league. He is borderline top five with how good Cole Kmet is. He has missed three passes all season long. Like, he's caught 27 off 30 targets. He is a surefire receiver now. Like, you know, he may not be like the most explosive guy, whatever, but he catches the goddamn ball. Why aren't you throwing it to him? Unbelievable. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
He's athletic. He trimmed weight. Why are you not throwing it to him in the red zone and instead trying to target Keenan Allen three times when he is clearly not getting separation? I mean, I do not understand some of the issues there. You could have schemed up things for Kmet. I think maybe I'm wrong, but I thought the Cardinals weren't exactly great against the tight ends coming into this season, or coming into this game, excuse me. The fact he had zero targets just infuriates me. That and in a game where Caleb Williams threw the ball 41 times.
They're, I mean, unless we watch the all 22 and they've got him like double, like they've got a safety over the top, you know, with like a, you know what I mean? With like a nickel, you know, like shadowing him, then okay. But doubt that was happening all game, because I think you still have to respect. I mean, it ought to be a situation where you have to respect DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, and, you know, the guy who should catch on third down who missed it.
Keenan Allen.
right? Like, you hear all the time, obviously, like, you know, I listen to like an insane amount of fantasy sports radio, and there's always this discussion, and I think it's true, of when you add certain pieces, D-Hop or, you know, Adams, how that tends to sometimes unlock other players. Like, at first you would assume that they would like lessen in value because now all of a sudden the target share is going to go to the new acquisition. But truly, when you, I think, have like a lot of talent across the board, that should help to unlock players within your offense. And I think we talked about this at the beginning of the year, you know, this constant inability to scheme people open. I like that you said that, Brendan, because like, why wouldn't you? Like, again, watch the film, scout the Cardinals. I guarantee I can look it up in a minute, but I would imagine probably the Cardinals are in the bottom third of the league when it comes to, you know, yards allowed and touchdowns allowed to tight ends. Again, I think we're just making here like quite a, I think a pretty irrefutable case for why, you know, Shane was the wrong choice. He was the wrong choice.
Again, oops. I think in this situation, probably because of the lack of leadership at the top, I lauded Waldron's ability to adapt and bring something out of different quarterbacks. He helped get Jared Goff to a new level as the quarterbacks coach and then eventually OC. Though I don't think he was the OC in LA, he was.
You're saying he thrived under like Carroll, like because Carroll was such a great leader. Then
that yes, because you don't. Yes, because there's a yes, yeah. There's a clear person at the top. Yep. But then, you know, again, like the ability to work with several different quarterbacks, Jared Goff, a pure pocket passer, Russell Wilson did well under him in 2021 as somebody who was able to move a little bit more. Geno Smith, that was the revival. Again, I know some people want to talk about Dave Canales being that guy, but Shane Waldron played a big role in that as well. So I really brought into the fact that I think this guy can coach different quarterbacks, that I think he can make him or work with him to become a really good passer and develop an offense around him. I think that still could potentially be possible, but my God, there's no rhythm. And it just feels like he's throwing darts trying to think like, okay, this might work. Hey, let's keep targeting Keenan. Like he might be good as a first read, but it all also starts when if you can't protect the quarterback and he's running for his life. I mean, everything goes hand in hand like that. It's just a chain reaction, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
By the way, if everybody in the chat, if you guys continue, I love the conversations going on. If you have questions, we'll try to get to them. But I know there's conversations going in there. But I think we should get to the, I'm just not going to play the sound because I don't know where it is. We're going to get to the outhouse and the penthouse.
Nice work.
Did I do that okay?
You nailed it.
Did I do that?
Yeah, you did.
All right, sweet. The outhouse and the penthouse, of course, is brought to you by our guy, Jeff Cadwallader. Attention, Chicagoland investors and business owners. If you need a commercial real estate expert, you should look no further than Jeff Cadwallader at SVN Landmark Commercial Real Estate in Geneva. With generations of experience, Jeff specializes in office, retail, investment, and land properties. For all your commercial real estate needs, trust Jeff Cadwallader. Visit Jeff CRE, that's JEFCRE.com, or call 630-254-4734 today. And you know what? Jeff did residential as well. Even if you aren't buying something commercial, you got some questions, reach out to Jeff. He's been a huge supporter of us. Make sure you give him a call if you have any questions, if you are buying or selling a home, or like we said, with commercial property. All right, Jack. We could probably spend an hour in the outhouse since the Bears lost this game.
Yeah.
We could probably go at least two deep. So okay. I'll pass it off to you. We'll go every other. So we'll do you do one, I do one, and then you do one, I'll do one.
Yeah, that sounds great. And listeners, who do you have in the outhouse? It can be a player, it can be a group, it can be coaches, it can be announcers, officials. Ooh, officials. But I'm gonna give the first outhouse honors to the run defense, which is, I don't know, they like didn't get off the plane, I guess. Carolina rushed 34 times for 213 yards, which is a 6.3 average, and three touchdowns with a long of 53. You know, Billings going out hurt, but I think that they were getting gashed even before Billings went out. You know, I guess that again makes kind of like the point I was talking about earlier is like, I mean, I guess the Arizona could commit to a run game. I'm not familiar what they've done with their offensive line, but appeared to be pretty solid. I could be wrong on how much what their injuries have looked like, but it seemed like when they chose to control the game and run the ball, that was the difference in the game and allowed for them to dominate 29-9.
There was a moment you could see it in like the second quarter where it's like, hey, we can run it over these guys and they cannot stop it. Whether it's Benson, whether it's DeMarcado, whether it's Connor.
Wow. Yeah.
There were so many missed tackles. I mean, Daryl Taylor on the James Connor play up near the red zone, that nearly went for a touchdown. I mean, you can count, you're going to lose count trying to find the missed tackles. I'll just give it quick. James Connor, 18 carries, 107 yards. Emery DeMarcado, 4 carries, 59 yards. Of course, he had that 53-yard run at the end of the half. Trey Benson, 8 carries, 37 yards. Kyler Murray had 2 for 6. Trey McBride had a rushing attempt. DJ Dallas. So, I mean, but the three running backs all had greater than 4.5 yards per carry. Like, that is three running backs deep. So, they had their way with this Bears defense, unfortunately. So, that is a very appropriate outhouse. My outhouse, I'm going to pick on the old man, Keenan Allen. We need to start a dialogue about Keenan Allen. I think he's definitely lost a step and he just might not be the same guy. I mean, I said I think I was talking with Mason West on Bare Bones on the Second City Gridiron earlier this week. I mean, any hope of Keenan Allen having one of those 120-yard games that he even had last year, like, that's gone. He has not eclipsed 50 yards this season yet. He had some pretty bad drops. He was not getting separation once again. He and Caleb Williams could not get on the same page. Keenan Allen was the most targeted player for the Bears. He had 10 targets, and he caught 4 passes for 36 yards. That's not good enough. So I just think before he's done that.
Do you think that that was a misstep on Poles' part? Do you think that money should have gone? Do you think Poles regrets not perhaps going after a high-priced O-lineman, even though that maybe went against his like overall long-term strategy for rebuilding the team?
That's a really good question. Let me just say, I don't think he regrets the Keenan Allen trade because you needed to get a veteran receiver in here. And I know the plan and the hope was to draft Rome Odunze, but
that's a good point.
You just don't know if that's going to happen. And so I think you hedge your bets a little bit by getting a guy on a one-year deal, only cost you a fourth. I mean, yeah. I don't think nobody saw this coming from Keenan Allen, that he would be this unproductive in this offense. I think we all saw that he was going to take a step back to guys like DJ Moore and eventually Rome Odunze, but not to this extent. So I don't think he regrets that, but I think you can say like maybe he does regret not putting more assets and using more assets, I guess, for the offensive line and maybe trying to pay someone. But it's I think that's a really good point.
All right, so I'm a little hesitant to do this because I'm not sure I want to go down this road. But I think I'm going to put Caleb in the outhouse. I just be real clear. I'm not having any discussions about whether he's a bust or not. I'm not having discussions about, I know he was running for his life at the end of the game. I do think he's had two not so great games in a row. He did not play very well last week. And again, this is all like prefaced by what I said. I think the offensive line isn't very good, and I'm not real sure that it's a really good game plan either. So he's swimming upstream, but I've got some concerns, especially in terms of the misfires. And here's where I'm really getting concerned, Brendan, is think about passes to the perimeter, either verticals to the sideline or end zone shots. I would think that we probably cannot count on one hand the amount of times that those throws have been in bounds. That's starting to really, like, I don't know. And again, I don't know if that's because of like the way he's being developed or coached and there's a fear of throwing an interception or what, but he doesn't seem like the type of guy that's going to back down, you know, in those situations. I feel like if he's a guy who has a shot, then he's going to take that shot and he's going to be aggressive come what may. I mean, great. You know, you didn't have any zero intercept, you had no interceptions, but I think some of that is because you're throwing it to like the guy who holds up the big like cone on the sidelines for the sound, you know, like that, I don't know. Like I don't know if that guy, he's got good hands, I guess, to like hold the sound thing, but I don't think he's really eligible as a receiver, nor is he on the roster, Caleb. So again, I'm not going to go down some like ridiculous, you know, Jack doesn't like Caleb. I'm just going to say, I don't think he's played very well, you know, in the last couple games, despite some two very difficult opponents. And I'm mostly just concerned about these vertical shots to the perimeter. I don't know what's going on there. You got to throw them in bounds, and you have to give your high paid, highly athletic receivers a chance to catch them. Oh, okay. So Brendan froze. All right. So it's my show, everyone. What do you guys want to do next? I was also going to mention that Caleb was sacked 6 times. And I want to say this was his lowest QBR and rating. I think he had a 68.9 rating on the night. So I think that's awful. A major concern when it comes to, you know, Caleb's development. I know Brendan's going to come back in here and give his second outhouse. So I won't give another one because I think maybe I would have taken it. So go ahead, Brendan.
No, it's all good. I think Xfinity actually emailed me a few weeks ago, like, hey, your equipment's out of date. You should buy something new. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That helps. They're known for their stellar customer service.
Yeah, right. They're not going to do it for me. I got to buy it myself. No, I really, I wanted to make the point about just the deep balls and everything. I think part of it is on Caleb. I think part of it is the lack of separation from these receivers. So I think it's one of the two, like he's afraid of making those mistakes. So he's just like, if I can't get my guy to kind of go up and make a play or something, I'm going to just be safe and throw it out of bounds. And I think that could be potentially coaching where Matt Eberflus has talked about.
Maybe he dropped again, but he'll come back. But I do think Brendan makes great points, and it's likely a combination of those things. I do really hate the potential that, you know, perhaps the head coach
so is weird.
Oh, you there? You go. Okay, cool.
It's just so weird. It's just it's like going in and out. I don't know what's going on.
It's frustrating, but I'm glad you're back.
It's just crazy. Might have to wrap it up soon. But yeah. So anyway, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
My second outhouse, easy, Tremaine Edmonds. Way too many missed tackles.
Okay.
He was out of position so many times with some missed passes. I just thought like he was getting blown out of just the picture basically when it came to especially the run plays. I thought he played a terrible game, and I think a lot of those big runs were because he was out of position or just missing tackles.
It's interesting because I think as well as he's played, especially since he got healthy at the end of last year, he has played better. But I think even when he was acquired in free agency, there was just talk about how he was a better cover guy than he was a filler, you know. Yeah. And I did see him on blocks a little bit, meaning that he wasn't getting off of them like a linebacker should, and playing, you heard me say this before, playing half the man instead of all of the man, and he's going to get it swallowed up by offensive linemen. I saw a lot of replays where he was just kind of like, you're supposed to play half the man and make sure that you can rip through with a shoulder so that you can leverage ball side. He just wasn't doing that at all. So that's a good pick on your part. I agree.
Yeah. Hey, Matt agrees with me too.
All right. Yeah.
I don't know if he's gone, but still. All right. Out or penthouse.
That's okay. Take your time.
So we got to choose somebody, and I think it's always such a, it's a coward move. I don't know. Carlos Santos, 3 for 3 in field goals with a long of 53. I guess he's, you know, a good thing is that he's been consistent. And I feel like he's added a little distance to his kicks. I don't think he was the 53-yard guy previously. No. And am I right that he kicked one of those, like, when the roof was still open? Which, by the way, what the HE double toothpicks was up with that? But, oh, there's a hailstorm? Wait. Them's controlling the weather again. Is that what happened? Did they make it hail like only when the Bears?
That was insane. Ball? You have a retractable roof and you're like, there might hail today. I don't know. Let's screw it. Let's open it up. It's great. Yeah. That's really good. And actually, it's funny you say that because one of my buddies, he is so against Cairo Santos just because he doesn't have a big leg. Yeah, because he doesn't have a big 53. Leg.
53. I think he kicked a couple out of the back of the end zone on kickoffs too, didn't he?
I think so. So I was, you know, I was watching it and he hit that 53 and that thing had plenty of distance. And I looked at him and was like, oh yeah, Cairo Santos not good enough to do it, huh? That one was good from like at least 56, 57 potentially.
Yeah. He must be doing a lot of leg curls, you know, old school, like on the heated leg press.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good pick. He was solid. I just want to shout out a few people. Matt's talking about Rome looked good today.
Agreed.
I thought Rome looked pretty good. I thought he left a few plays on the field, but still he had 5 catches, 104 yards. He had that big 44-yard gain. That was really nice. Heidi, I will fight your buddy, Brendan. Do not touch Bobby Santos. I appreciate that. I know, Heidi. I know you will. That's great.
She's but sick.
I want Heidi. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I hope you feel better. Yeah, I never want to mess with Heidi.
No, never.
I think I'm going to do a 2-for-1 here. I'm going to go with the backup defensive backs, particularly Elijah Hicks and Terrell Smith. Both of those guys starting in place of Jaquan Brisker and Tyreek Stevenson. Smith looked fantastic. He was creating plays. He had that big breakup early on. He unfortunately got hurt, so his stats aren't great and, you know, at least as good as they could have been. He had one tackle. He also had the one pass breakup. Hopefully he's okay because I thought he was playing just at a really high level. And for a minute, it kind of looked like Tyreek Stevenson may not get his starting job back. With how I know. Looked.
I thought 100% he was going to get Wally pipped.
Yeah. And then Elijah Hicks led the team with 8 total tackles. He had the fumble recovery as well with a really good heads-up play. Like, and I really want to just point that out. He immediately saw it and he kind of looked like a little kid. Oh, it's a ball. And just went for it. I feel like where my head went, Jack, right when I saw that was the 2013 week 17 game against the Packers, where the ball was just on the ground and then Lance Briggs, nobody picked it up. They just walked past it. And then I think, what is it? Miles Boykin or something picked it up and he ran it for the touchdown. Like nobody did anything. Awful, but in that moment, like, the ball was on the ground, nobody saw it, and then Elijah Hicks just kind of had that like heads up moment, like, oh my god, there's a ball, like, I'm gonna pick it up because I think it's a fumble. So big time play from him. And then Matt Van Der Zanden also mentioned that Reddy Stewart, who made his first his first professional game, he had a peanut punch as well. So the backups, I thought, played pretty well. The passing game wasn't in particularly like that effective from Kyler Murray. I mean, maybe it didn't have to be because of how bad the run defense was, but I thought the secondary played pretty well overall.
I did too. And I think, well, it probably helped how much, how many passes did the Cards threw what? He threw 13 times. Yeah. He threw 20 times. He completed 13. I mean, I think that like, that's just really good game management on the part of the Cardinals. I just think I'm praising them a ton. I know, but I feel like, you know, Kyler Murray, when he's good, he's great. But when he's not as good as when they like basically put the entire game on his shoulders. And I think they have discovered that. And so there's a great example of what you do to, you know, cater your coaching to the personnel that you have, right? So they're putting Kyler Murray in a position to win, you know, and for the most part, he made really good decisions. Well, he made really good decisions. I mean, heck, they're even doing that with Jared Goff in Detroit. Last two games, he's barely thrown the ball at all. Why do it? Like, why do it if you don't need to? If you can, control the ball on the ground and kind of have like a laser focus with the times in which you choose to pass, I think that's a better formula than having your rookie throw the ball 41 times and completing 22 of them. You know?
Yeah, that's called complimentary football.
Oh, that's what it's called.
Oh, yeah. What is that? Yeah, we haven't seen that in a little bit. We did see it early on, and then we didn't, unfortunately. So,
right. Do you want to do some news and nugs, or do you want to get out of here, Mr.
No, I think let's do anything we missed. What's on your mind? What haven't we talked about today?
Well, I mean, I do think that the officials, you know, bear a little responsibility here. I think you all know us to be the type of folks that don't really place the entire blame on officials, but I think the leveraging, you know, penalty was a little weak. Maybe it was accurate. I don't know. I just feel like you watch game after game, you know, in the NFL and the field goal gets kicked and they move to a commercial and back we come. But nope, not tonight, not with our Bears. You know, I thought that was a really terrible call. I thought there were several really bad calls. And I said the Bears get very few breaks, generate very few of their own breaks. And when they do generate their own breaks, seldom take advantage. And as I like thought about that more and more after I typed it, I was like, well, that would be like an undercurrent theme for quite a long time with the Chicago Bears, right? I mean, they generate very few breaks, or they get very few breaks. They generate very few of their own. And when they do generate their own breaks, they seldom take advantage. That's like kind of an indicator of a not very good team.
Yeah. I mean, right? Yeah, you said it right.
I don't like it, but I think it's true. I mean, they forced a fumble, and did they get a field goal?
Did they? I can't remember if that was the one. I don't think they did, to be honest.
Listeners, did they get shut down off that fumble?
They did get the field goal. They did get the field goal. You're right. They got the second field goal. And then that's when Arizona came back and just went down the field to get the touchdown. It was a 6-7 game at that field goal, which again, like, things were in reach. They were winning the turnover battle. And you know, like, so I want to ask you, I don't want to say the refs, like, yeah, we mentioned it. The refs, I didn't think, had a great game by any means.
Yeah.
But obviously they were not the reason the Bears lost. At least you can say that. What did you think about the Jervon Dexter penalty that took off, that wiped away the field goal that led to the touchdown, the whole leverage call?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't know without looking at like the actual way in which that rule is written. I know that the NFL always has like points of emphasis at the beginning of the year. And I guess I would say that overall, I don't feel as though when they choose to do points of emphasis, it's an overall plus or, you know, better game because of it. Because I feel as though, I don't know if they're getting graded on it. You know, I don't know if there's like a message from on high where it's like, hey, we're really going to be watching leverage this year. And if we watch your film and we don't see you calling leverage, then you're going to get marked down. If that's the case, it's a bad system. Like, that's not, I understand, like, looking at the entirety of the year for penalties that aren't being called, like hip drop tackles, for instance, and safety of the game type of stuff. Like, absolutely, that should be incorporated into the way in which you make a point of emphasis. But what's the leverage? Like, I mean, you want to do something, NFL, and I'm going to like try to not like freak out here, Brendan, but maybe you idiots should like look at the catch rule, because the stupidest rule in any sport, in any like nation, anywhere on this planet is your catch rule. And you're going to spend time making a point of emphasis out of the leverage rule? I mean, I don't know, Brendan. Maybe he like just had his hand resting on the back, you know, of the other player. I didn't like, yeah. I've seen instances where when I've seen leverage in the past, it looks as though someone runs from like 3 to 4 yards out, right? Jumps and then pushes and like literally propels themselves and uses another player for leverage. I guess that was my understanding of the rule.
That, no, same here. That I think I don't really have much more to add. I had the same thing. I didn't think it was a good call at all. I thought that he still like he was obviously getting penetration, but it didn't look like he was just completely like just using his entire force on the guy. I think perhaps it is something that they're trying to look at. I think if I remember correctly, it was going to be more emphasized, and they have missed quite a few too that were actually egregious. So and you look, that was the difference between 4 points there. And I think like, you know, it still made it a 1 point game, I believe, or I'm sorry, not a 1 point, a one score game. But that was when you could start to feel momentum really, really shift. And then of course the touchdown at the end of the half just completely let the floodgates open. So, I thought that was,
think about this for a minute, Brendan, you think about the way in which Bears fans have traveled, and it makes it, you know, we've talked about this before. I think it makes it especially sad and egregious the way that our fans have been paid back by this organization. But I mean, if this is the case, and I think this was similar in London, and I think this was similar in Washington, there was a crap ton of Bears fans. There was times where that stadium was loud with Bears fandom. So that's like 3 weeks in a row where you've got Bears fans just absolutely showing out for this team. We have the best fans. Like, we truly deserve better. We truly do.
Yeah, I mean, and shout out. I knew the Bears were going to travel well to Arizona. I didn't know about Washington last week, and you could tell that London was going to be a big one. But yeah, there's Bears fans all over. We got quite a few Cardinals fans in the chat tonight too. So we appreciate you guys being here. I mean, great game by you. Just, you know, I made fun of Jonathan Gannon so much when he got there and he's doing the pew 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 thing, and
weird. It was
weird. He's making it was weird, but he's making me eat my words. So points for you guys.
Yeah.
The few things on my list, one, the Bears might be screwed without Andrew Billings. He was hurt. He left the game early with a chest injury. They're calling it a pec injury, and he was quickly ruled out. So I am not a doctor, but I could assume that means potentially a torn pec, and that could be the season. And if there's anybody that is just so invaluable to this defense, it is easily Andrew Billings. I mean, he is the run stuffer. Like, you know, once he went out, it became a lot easier for the Bears, for the Cardinals to run on the Bears. But with him potentially out for the season, they have very little depth behind him, which makes him even that much more important. So this could be a huge, huge loss for the rest of the season. And hopefully it's not as bad as it potentially could be. But that's potentially devastating. But
it really is. He's been an absolute rock for two and a half seasons now. Two seasons. I mean, he was a great find.
One of the best free agent signings of Ryan Poles' career. He's been here for a year and a half, but he signed a contract extension last year, so he has signed through 2025. But yeah, hopefully it's nothing serious, but I'm expecting the worst, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The last thing I have is Tyreek Stevenson. So we talked a little bit about him at the beginning, of course, with the Hail Mary situation, the practice, the whole will he start, won't he start. Then there was the report earlier in the day that he left practice for a brief period of time, and it seemed a lot worse than I think it actually was once we heard from the Bears reporters who were actually there. But I got to give him credit for responding in a big way. He played much better once he got back in the game, had a few pass deflections. He had that awesome like rip. I think it was on Marvin Harrison Jr. where he just, you know, they were going to the ground and he ripped the ball out. Yes. That's the kind of game that you want to see from somebody who just got eviscerated by not only the national media, but I think his teammates took exception to it. Yeah. So with a lot of things that went wrong in this game, I was really happy to see Tyreek Stevenson bounce back with a relatively good game.
That's a great point. He could have handled, going all the way back to what your holistic point was about the way the staff and the Bears responded to what was a shit show ending. Nice to see one guy say, yeah, I'm still an elite player. I'm going to play like it. That's good.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Any last words about whatever the hell we just watched in the desert?
Yeah, I know. I think we've covered it, man. And I'm not sure, it's probably going to be a point of diminishing returns if we go any further. It's hard to project. I mean, New England's playing better than expected. I still don't think it's going to be a total pushover, next week. I don't know. Did they end up winning or not?
No, they lost.
They lost.
Titans won. Yeah.
Okay. They tied it with Drake May had a kind of amazing pass.
Yeah. That, oh my God.
Yeah.
He looked like he was like a deer just running for his life. He didn't know what to do. And then he found the receiver in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Are we, is that game home?
Yes, that's home. Yeah. The Bears get three home games in a row now.
I don't know if you've heard this or not, but we win games at home and we don't tend to win them on the road, Brendan.
Yeah, at least on Sundays. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 0-18. 0-18 on the road on Sundays. Like, that is what the hell, man?
You have to try. Like, hey, what do we want to do? How about we just never win on the road? Everybody in favor? All those in favor. Like, seriously?
Oh God.
My kids would say, bruh.
Whatever they are doing, London is, an exception, because I know that was kind of a home game thing. It was also just a completely different situation because they left earlier in the week. Whatever their road trip itinerary is, whatever their plans are, change it for Sundays. Absolutely change it.
That's a great point. Just shake it up completely, because what you're doing is not working. Sucks.
No. Oh, my gosh. All right, Jack, let's get to shout outs and let's get out of here. So who do you got for shout outs?
I'm going to go because this, obviously it's been therapeutic. It's been cathartic. That's good. I was Brent and I were saying we both had really great weekends aside from this. I've got so many great positives to shout out. My daughter Peyton and her doubles, partner Taylor Zemanek qualified for the state tennis tournament, last week, and played in it. Now they didn't play so great when they got there, but they did. They qualified for state. That's pretty cool. So I was really proud of them. It was really fun to be a part of it because it's kind of brought all our family together. And Taylor's parents, the Zemaneks are really nice people. Tennis is a cool sport. It's really fun. Then I kind of supported some friends of mine. One of my friends, she's in charge of the plays at one of the local schools. And so they put on a show, Radium Girls. And it was just a really wonderful performance. And so shout out to Claire Kennedy and the folks that are at the NNHS Theater, who just put on a wonderful show there. The Naperville North Huskies did play in a playoff game, first round. It was a barn burner against Maine South. They did end up dropping it, but boy, oh boy, there's just a ton of really great kids on that particular team who broke school records and season records. And they were 7-2 in the regular season. So shout out to Naperville North High School. One of my Minnesota Vikings friends and a colleague had a 30th birthday. So he had a pickleball 30th birthday celebration. I've never played, had a freaking blast. I could do that again. It was really fun to move around a little bit, be competitive a little bit. We always talk about that, right? Where it's once you're done being competitive, it's hard to find ways to have a competitive outlet. And I really do enjoy competitive outlets. So that was fun. And shout out to Kevin Lusky, Claire Kennedy, to the NNHS football team, and to my daughter Peyton Wright for state tournament in tennis?
Two things. I was really sad when I found out that like high school playoffs are already starting, because that to me tells me like, oh my God, like that's the first wave of like, football starting to end. Like, just, you know, it's one of those things you realize already the next week's going to be week 10 for the NFL. And so that was, but that's, you know, at least they were able to make it there. Yes. I think Maine South was my wife's high school. So
they're good. Dude. Sure. Like they're very like the red Maine South Hawks. They've got a sophomore quarterback who I would think we're probably going to hear about going forward. He's really good.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Last thing, where'd you guys play pickleball?
There's a place off of like 59, what's it called? Like Pinpoint Pickleball or something like that. I think it's a Knicker Throw. Okay. It's an indoor place. Like the place was packed.
Yeah.
There were like people everywhere playing pickleball. Like I know that became super huge, during the pandemic, but I kind of missed the boat on it. So, have you played? Do you enjoy it?
I haven't played yet. I think I played once a few years ago, but I'm down to play. So the reason I was asking is kind of like near up by us, there's this relatively new place called Pickle House.
Okay.
And it's essentially like Topgolf for pickleball. Like there's like this, it's a full bar. They have courts and everything.
I think
there's a golf simulator too.
Oh, cool.
Me and my friends, like we've talked about it a few times, like, hey, we could go to pickleball. We haven't done it yet, but it's like right there. So for a second, I was like, oh, man, were you up by me? Like that would have been really,
it sounds cool. This was similar. They had kind of an event room, but it wasn't like a Topgolf vibe. So I think like a Topgolf vibe like would be super cool for that. I would do it. Watch a YouTube video of the rules and then go play. It's really fun.
Yeah, because I used to play tennis in high school too, so I totally.
Oh, well, you'll be pretty good then.
I don't know. We'll see, man. before I get to my shout outs, I know we've mentioned the chat a lot, but man, it's been popping tonight. We really appreciate you guys, not only showing support but also being able to have really good discussions too. I want to shout out again Miles Johnson, our Cards fan who just kind of joined the show. I'm totally cool when other fan bases come into the, you guys want to hang out, whatever, just keep it cool. Sounds like he was having a really good discussion. He appreciates the discussion we're having. So thank you for coming around, Miles. Again, congrats. It's a tough loss, but I'm glad at least you enjoyed yourself tonight. And then we also had another Cardinals fan here. The one who was at the, Cardinalson BBQ. Really appreciate you guys, as well as all of our friends, Matt, Heidi, Connor, Ozzy, Jorge. I don't want to miss anybody, but seriously, we always all appreciate you guys. So thank you. My shout outs go to my brother, Ian, my little brother, who officially defended his dissertation this past week in mathematics. So he is now a doctor of mathematics. Loves numbers more than most people and other equations and stuff that I really don't understand, but shout out to him. It's been a long time coming. So he defended it at NIU. I got to see him this past weekend, so we went out for some drinks and celebrated. I'm really proud of him, and it's great. So shout out to my little bro Ian. I mentioned it before, but you know what? I'll give him his flowers. Shout out to Eddie, my boy. I think it's Eddie at Eddie B2, who keeps just chirping me about Shane Waldron. I think he won. I think I'm defeated. So, he won. He won. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe the Bears put up 40 next week and I'm back on the, BS. But,
yeah.
shout out to Eddie. He's one of my favorite follows. We've followed each other for a long time, so just always appreciate the interactions. And then shout out to Mason West, who is on Twitter. I can't remember his handle, but if you just search Mason West, you'll find him. He's with Windy City Gridiron and the Second City Gridiron. He hosts a couple podcasts. I talked with him earlier this week on Halloween. It's always a good time talking with him. So shout out to Mason. And this was at least a cathartic and, good therapeutic conversation with you, Jack, and with everybody. I needed it. I hope you felt the same way, and I hope everybody listening did as well.
Yeah, I think it's good to hash it out. And there are some things I mean, I suppose in some ways there's a bit of redundancy because we've seen the Bears and their demise, you know, so many times. But again, you know, there are still elements that it's still the game of football. I love, you know, that one thing that doesn't change is I really do enjoy talking the game of football, and I enjoy talking with you, especially Brendan. So thanks, man.
Oh, thanks, man. Definitely likewise. You make a lot of great points, and it's also fun to just talk, you know, one-on-one sometimes and just, you know, kind of riff back and forth. So I'm sure we'll do it again, but that's it for us tonight. Thank you again, everybody, for listening, everybody for watching. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe on YouTube. Give us a like, follow us all on our socials. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X. If you're listening for the podcast, give us a rating, give us a 5-star rating. It helps generate new followers and people to find the show. So we just, again, appreciate all the support. We'll be back next week after the Bears-Patriots game. So for Jack Wright, Brian Dangle, Patrick Sheldon, Logan Bradley, Cam Ellis, I am Brendan Shagrew. Thank you guys so much. Hope you have a great night. And as always, Bear Down, Chicago.